How are you today? It's good to see you. I want to thank you for last week. Thank you. At the last minute, we kind of had to make some changes, but thank you. And the way you responded, and Lynn, what you did, and the worship team, you guys are the best, and I speak blessing and honor. Well, we're finally here. We never thought we'd get here. We are at the end of the book of 1 Samuel. It's coming. The title today is The King is Dead, Long Live the King. You know, today is an unusual story. We close the story on the Saul part of the story. We close this today, and it's really a tragic story. It's a story that started out with great promise, head and shoulders. He was the one. He had the look. Central casting said, this is the king. It was Saul. But it's a tragic story the way it ends, because here's what I called it. I call this a tragic story of what could have been or what might have been. It is a story of bad choices. Every one of us know of someone or some story where we look at it now where it started with promise. And the end of the story is tragedy. It's a story of bad choices, bad direction. And it's a story of what could have been. I heard a story that a message that a preacher preached many years ago. And he was preaching about the concept that when he was dead in trespasses and in sin. And when he became a born-again child of God, things changed in his life. It changed so much, and his wife at the time didn't just want to receive it, but she wanted to fight against it. And things happened in this life, and it was a tragic story, and through a tragic circumstance, this lady was gone. She was gone from the earth through a tragic circumstance. And later on, I heard this man as a preacher make this statement. He said, one day I went back and I stood at that grave thing and at the grave place. And he said, my heart was torn, and God had been doing things, and I'd prospered in ministry and things. But it was the kind of prayer I said, what a tragic story. It did not have to be this way. You've missed this excitement. You've missed this touch. I don't want you to miss it. But this story is somebody who missed it. Nothing is more sad than a story of what could have been. How many of you seen those stories? They show those times when someone's arrested or someone has done something awful, and they dig out his little kindergarten picture, and there's a little face with freckles there, smiling there, and you're looking at a lot of promise, a lot of possibility, as the song says, but their life is a series of choices and wrong turns. There and it ends up so tragic. That's not that little joyful face right there. I've had other people said, man, I went through abuse in my life, and when I look back at little pictures of me as a little kid, I really didn't realize what was in front of me. That's tragic, and I'm praying God heals those memories. But there are similar stories. Saul at many points failed when he should have called on God. He made choices that appealed to himself. This kind of life, when repeated with repeated wrong direction, will suffer a great residual kickback. A great residual effect. It comes to a tragic ending. And when under attack, we need to learn this statement. When under attack, it speaks to the challenge inside of each of us to stand strong, to walk in discernment, to honor God, to be a good spouse, a good worker, and to finish well. These are very important things this story talks about. Speaking of honesty, somebody said, I don't feel safe going back to work. And the guy said, yeah, but you sure felt safe getting out spending that check they sent you in the mail. It's sure funny, the fake job numbers that come out on Friday. 1.8 million Americans have turned down jobs to keep getting a check there. Somebody went to a restaurant just the other night. He had a 45-minute wait there. The restaurant was 80% empty, and the guy said, well, none of my workers are coming back because they're making more money staying home. How many of you know this is cheese in a rat trap? You got it right now, and it pays off. We are living in our world today, and if you're living that way, that is not a testimony for the child of God. That is not a testimony. We are now in our world. We're in critical mode. What is my prayer? Oh, God, give us the right words. Give us, as I prayed a minute ago, the discernment we need, and let us not miss you. Let us not miss God's best for all of us right now. That's a good word right now. Today, this whole story is the story of those who missed God, or as what the word calls, and you've probably heard before, missing your day of visitation. The story, the concept of missing your day of visitation is a Bible story. Jesus, they talk about lamps that are burning, and this whole kind of story is there, and if your lamp's not burning, and all those problems, not being ready for when the call comes, and I don't have time to go into it right now, but that is not the heart of God. The heart of Jesus out of the box was for his people. He didn't want them to miss what he had. He said, now, in, this is in Luke 19:41. Now as he drew near, he saw the city. He wept over the city. He said, if you had known, even you, especially in your day, the things that make for peace, but now they're being hidden from your eyes. For the day will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment around you. They'll surround you. They'll close in on you on every side. They will level you and your children within you. They'll level you to the ground. And you will not leave, and they will not leave in you one stone upon another. Why? Because you did not know the time of your visitation. America's about to miss their day of visitation. The Church of America is about to miss their day of visitation. This is not just Saul's story if you're doing the math right now. It's the story of thousands through life who've missed God's day of visitation. That brings us to our story today. Chapter 31, verse 1 of 1 Samuel. The Philistines attacked Israel. The men of Israel fled before them. Many were slaughtered on the slopes of Gilboa. The Philistines closed in on Saul and his sons. They killed three of his sons. They're named right there. The fighting grew very fierce around Saul. They're closing in on him. The Philistine archers caught up with him. They wounded him severely. Saul groaned to his armor bearer, take your sword, kill me before these pagan Philistines come and run me through and taunt and torture me. You see that? But his armor bearer was afraid and would not do it. So Saul took his own life and fell on it. Notice that statement there? When his armor bearer realized that Saul was dead, he fell on his own sword and he died beside the king. So Saul, his three sons, his armor bearer, all troops died together on the same day. God never has to backtrack. Let me rewind a story that it seems like ages ago now. But remember when Samuel appears to him, when he's looking for other direction in chapter 28. Samuel, and you just see it as reference here, but I'm going to read it. Samuel said, the Lord has done just as he said he would do. He's torn the kingdom from you and given it to your rival David. The Lord has done this to you today because you refuse to carry out his fierce anger against the Amalekites. Remember that line. What's more, the Lord will hand you and the army of Israel over to the Philistines tomorrow. You and your sons will be here with me. The Lord will bring them down, the entire army of Israel, in defeat. By the way, it says his armor bearer was there. The gospel commentator that a lot of people have read for many years, Matthew Henry, actually seems to feel that the armor bearer was the guy named Doang. You remember him? And he was the one that actually offered to kill and slaughter all the priests. Remember that? When they slaughtered the priests, that he was the one. His violent dealings returned back on his head there. But he said they're going to die on the same day. And as we say in the South, sure enough, it happened exactly that way as God said. Well, the Israelites were on the other side. They saw what was going on. They start running. The next day, though, the Philistines went out and they stripped him dead. And in verse number 9 of chapter 31, it says, they cut off Saul's head and they stripped him of his armor. Stop right here. This is likely revenge for the story of Goliath getting his head cut off. It is also the demonic demeaning of who was God's choice in the beginning. What was the one physical description of Saul? He was a head above everybody else. And what did they do? The head and shoulders taller, now he's a head shorter. They cut it off. This was done intentionally to dishonor Israel's God. And it said they proclaimed the good news of Saul's death in their pagan temple to the people throughout the land of Philistia. They placed his armor in the temple of the Asterisk. Now, remember that? Remember that idol? That's the whoring god. Remember that with all the foolishness that was going on in the temple and the poles and all that? That's the first dancing poles there, right there. And they fastened his body to the wall of the city. They shamed him. They demeaned him, but then they desecrated his body and they shamed him in exposing his body to the vultures. Head and shoulders, the massive leader, he is gone. The people heard what had been done. And the good people came late and took down Saul and his son's bodies from down the wall. They took their bones and buried them. They fasted for 7 days. I wrote here a question to myself about missing a day of visitation. Do you want to end up like Saul? Again, nobody wants to end up. You've heard me say it. You go to that, you look at kindergarten, and they got the, they used to call them, I don't know they do it now, but they had those little child prophecies about what the little fellow was going to be when he grew up. He's going to be a rocket scientist. He's going to be this. He's going to be that. And he's going to be a lawyer. He's going to do these great things. And you never see one. Here's Joe. And he's going to be a loser all of his life. He's going to be a burden on society. He doesn't want to. He's going to be a crook. You never hear that. It's always, he's going to be a rocket scientist. He's going to be an attorney. He's going to be the head of the police force. He's going to be a fireman. He's going to do all these things there. It never, I want to be a failure. Saul didn't set out that way. How did he end up here? Here's what I wrote. Saul gave more attention to pleasing himself than he did to pleasing God. Can I warn you and lovingly give you an encouragement today? You want to finish strong? Give more attention to pleasing God than pleasing yourself. David thought Saul was after his position, but all David was after was to please God. So now we turn the page. We have actually closed the last reading of 1 Samuel. We closed the reading there. Took him off the wall. They were wailing. So I have to turn the page now to tell you the rest of the story this morning. So in chapter 1, verse 1. After the death of Saul, David returned from his victory over the Amalekites and spent 2 days in Ziklag. Okay, he had to fight the Amalekites. Why was he still fighting the Amalekites? Because of Saul's disobedience. He did not utterly destroy the Amalekites, and they were left to grow, to prosper, and to regroup. They didn't quite win. You know, there's a biblical story. In fact, I might even talk about it in one of the messages in a few weeks from right now about the concept. You better make sure when you face your Agag that you take him out completely. That's a New Testament principle too. So here they are. They're still fighting this group because of Saul's disobedience. The third day, a man shows up from Saul's army camp. He had torn clothes. He put dirt on his head to show he was in mourning. He put on a show. He fell to the ground before David in deep respect. Can you hear the maudlin sound out of his voice right there? And David says, "Where have you come from?" He said, "Well, I escaped from the Israelite camp." "What happened?" David said. "Tell me how the battle went." The man said, "Our entire army fled from the battle. Many of the men are dead, and Saul and his son Jonathan are also dead." "Well, how do you know that Saul and Jonathan are dead?" he demanded. He said, I happened, verse number 6. He said, "I happened." And you know what I did in my notes? I put quote marks around the word happened. If you've ever raised little children, it just happened. I just happened to be by there, and it just happened. I happened to show up, and the cookies had fallen out of the closet into my mouth. And I put the happen there. I happened to be on Mount Gilboa, and there Saul was leaning on his spear with the enemy chariots and the charioteers closing in on him. When he turned, he saw me. He cried out for me to come. "How can I help?" He responded, "Who are you?" He said, I'm an Amalekite. Then he begged me, "Come over here and put me out of my misery, for I'm in terrible pain and I want to die." "So I killed him," the Amalekite told David, "for I knew he couldn't live." Have we noticed that the lawbreakers of God always have an answer? I knew he couldn't live, and then I took his crown, I took his armband, I have brought it for you, my Lord. David and his men hear that. They tear their clothes in sorrow. They're weeping. When they heard about it, they mourned and wept. They fasted for Saul and Jonathan, for the Lord's army, and for the nation of Israel, because they had died by the sword that day. I think David was feeling a genuine remorse about what could have been. It didn't have to end this way. Perhaps you might be in a situation right now. It's not the end for you. Don't let it end that way. There's a good word in front of you. Grab the word. Be strong. Be courageous in Jesus' name. I think he was genuinely sad. He had hoped it could have been better. Here's where I have to think that God knew what he was doing when he removed Saul from the life of David. They were getting ready to move into a new time, and that disruptive influence that was not for God and not for David had to be removed. Sometimes we mourn the loss of certain things in our lives and even people in our lives. A friend of mine wrote this statement one time. He said, God removes some people from your life because he heard conversations that you did not hear. And I have to believe that God heard some things. Back to the messenger. Been talking about discernment for the last 3 weeks. I prayed about discernment a few minutes ago when we did communion. David's discernment radar is engaged. Why? Watch this. This young man and his story did not ring true. He was likely telling a lie. Verse 4 that we read a few moments ago clearly said it this way. Saul took his own life. The word said that. Remember when I said why? It said, verse 4, Saul took his own life. That's what the word of God said. It clearly states. Was this guy looting? Likely. Was he trying to save his neck? Certainly. Was he counting up the numbers and trying to ingratiate himself with the brand new king? He's thinking he is noble, but he took this is when you're carnal. He thought he was being noble when he admitted that he killed the king. He's actually taking the blame for killing the king. Verse 13, David said to the young man, who brought you the news and where are you from? He said, I'm a foreigner. I'm an Amalekite who lives in your land. And he said, and why were you not afraid to kill the Lord's anointed one? Stop right there. Do you remember 2 weeks ago when a young Egyptian slave came and told a story about the Amalekites and Ziklag? Another guy comes to the camp with a story, and David is discerning that this is the truth. And he actually made a pledge with that. Do you remember that? This is why you can be in the exact same circumstance, but your radar of discernment always has to be on. This looked the same. It felt the same. The poor look at it, he's just worn out. Somebody, we just need to take him in and help him. No, he's seeing, there's something there, and he's seeing something that's not ringing true right now. David said to one of his men, kill him. The man thrust his sword into the Amalekite and killed him. I wrote in parentheses, David probably stood over that body and he said, with your words, he said, you have condemned yourself, for you yourself have confessed that you killed the Lord's anointed one. Throughout our readings, we're seeing a type and shadow of Amalek is a type of the flesh. You either kill it or it'll kill you. You either kill it or it'll kill you. One great commentary wrote these words, it's ironic that Saul's lost his kingdom because he failed to annihilate the Amalekites. He did not kill Agag, and now one who said he was Amalekite killed him because he claimed that he destroyed Saul. Isn't that amazing? What could have been? It was sad. David launches into a song, verse 17. Boy's a singer. He composed a funeral song for Saul and Jonathan. He commanded that it be brought and also taught to the people of Judah. It is a known song of the called the Song of the Bow. It's recorded in what is called the Book of Jasher. Now, what's that? Sometimes you will read in the scriptures, you'll see some things that are recorded in different books there. You read some of the historian books like Josephus and the other things right there, and they will tell about different things that were recorded. Many times things were recorded, but they were not anointed. They were not inspired by God, but they're merely history of something that went on. This doesn't mean to say that the writer was inspired. It simply means it happened. It happened, and it's being used to make a useful point of learning right now. This book was mentioned twice, actually, in the scripture, but it seems that it was, some writers and historians, it was a lost book, not survived. All we really know about it are two scriptures that mention it. So we know that it was done, so that lends credence that it was done. Because it's mentioned in the Bible does not mean that it is inspired as the Bible is. So here's the song. Your pride and joy, O Israel, lies dead on the hills. This is the tragic miss in your day. Oh, how the mighty heroes have fallen. Very similar to the, I'm going to paraphrase a lot of the prayer, the song here. He goes on to say, don't announce it in Gath, don't proclaim it in the streets, or the daughters of the Philistines will rejoice. Those gossipers will run with it and they'll laugh. That's what they did when they defaced and demeaned his body, and they cut him up and nailed him to the wall of the city there. He said, kill me, if not, they're gonna the Philistines. Saul even knew that out of his own mouth. So David says, we're lamenting, we're crying today. Don't announce it though. He said the pagans, at the end of verse 21, the pagans will laugh in triumph. By the way, don't ever give the devil an opportunity to rejoice. Don't ever give him an opportunity to laugh. And then he says, oh, mountains of Gilboa, I'm paraphrasing a lot of it. That's where Saul actually died. He's putting a curse on where he died. Let there be no dew, no rain upon you, no fruitful fields, no grain there, and for there the shield of the mighty heroes were defiled. The shield of Saul, you'll no longer be anointed with oil. So look at verse 22. And the bow of Jonathan was powerful. The sword of Saul did its mighty work. They shed the blood of their enemies. They pierced the body of the mighty heroes. How beloved and gracious were Saul and Jonathan. They were together in life, and now they're together in death. They were swifter than eagles and stronger than lions. And then in verse 26, he closes. How I weep for you, my brother Jonathan, how much I loved you. And in verse 27, he says, oh, how the mighty heroes have fallen. Notice he used the word heroes. We've all had heroes, whether it's somebody on TV or an athlete or maybe somebody in our life. And we looked at them and we revered them. And through tragic circumstance, they failed or they didn't finish well. But they were heroes. Gee, I hate to see that happen. It makes me sad when I see that. David still has just enough of that leaning in and loving. Mighty have fallen. We're not going to give the devil an opportunity to rejoice in it right now. This is not just a story of life, but this is a story of a life and a goal for us, for a life that will end well. We're really talking about the word called legacy. What are we going to leave? I noticed in the readings, if you want to make a study of it a little bit deeper, David's tribute to Jonathan was quite deep. Because Jonathan was a wise, valiant, faithful friend. This is the loss that really bit him. He had those kind of emotions for Saul, but I think sometimes in his writing, he's being gracious, he's being mannerly. I think he's even exercising restraint of comments at his funeral. Having stood a few times in those situations, it's always a joy when you're praising the saint that has gone on. Well run. Oh, they were people, they had flaws, but they finished it, and you know where they are. Boy, there have been a few times that I've stood in front of a group of people, and how that one that we're here to gather about ended was not good, tragic, in some cases very foolish, against God. What do you say at those times? You make sure you know that each of us will face God. We talk about the legacy of faith that we can all have. So I think he was mannerly. He was honoring God, but he was still hurting at the same time. We understand that. His tribute was there. He was actually honoring the principles of God when he said, oh, the mighty have fallen, because God did that. And in the story of Saul, we realize two things as we're getting ready to say goodbye to this whole book. Two things. We're learning the importance of our choices. And we're also learning there are consequences of our choices. Saul's whole life, the importance of the choice, the consequence of the choice. That one choice, I'm going to let Agag live, was the consequence that took him out. It's true for all of us right now. We all have opportunities. We have to remind ourselves we're leaving a legacy every day. We're leaving our legacy every day. What are we leaving? What are they going to say about us? I encourage you with the word of the Lord today. This is decided by how we live, and this is decided by the choice we make. How did Saul get to this point? He got to a point where in his heart, pleasing God was not the first thing in his heart. He got to this point when he lived to please himself, as I said earlier. You will get into trouble if your heart starts minimizing what pleases God. Keep your radar tuned to what pleases God. Don't be sensitized. And it's very easy, because even church justifies those things. Well, you know, we live in a modern world now. Things are different. They even want to paint you in a picture that if you speak in a definitive, leaving a legacy of life and faith, that you're crazy these days. Don't buy into it right now. Make sure your heart is always, you're going to have trouble with folk on this planet. As long as folk are breathing, you're going to have trouble with them. Folk, and if there's no folk, you'll have trouble with yourself. That's the way we're wired. But we need to always make sure that our heart is soft toward the word of the Lord. I cannot get through to someone if their heart is not soft to the word of the Lord. Billy Graham couldn't get through to someone unless their heart was soft toward the Lord, unless they honored that thing right there. You know yourself, when you're having a natural discussion with someone and you've got two different opinions there, you can be just as right as rain, as Grandma used to say. You can be right as rain and the other one can be out in left field somewhere, but you will never find a meeting place if the hearts don't want to mend, if they don't want to come together right now. One of the old, you know, and that's how we get in trouble. That's how kids get in trouble. We become desensitized, like the bumps in the parking lot. First few times that we hit those bumps, we have to slow down, and we're careful. We shouldn't do those things. But after a while, after they've been hit, day after day, week after week, they become of no effect, and we slide over the bump that used to slow us down and to make us check our spirit. Boom, that hit, didn't it? I agree. One of the old Puritan ministers, famous Puritan, named Thomas Watson from the 1600s, here's what he said about our hearts. He says, Satan loves to fish in the troubled waters of a discontented heart. You get a little discouraged, you get a little ticked off, man, and your heart's going to get discouraged right now. You know what you've just done? You've done stirred the waters and said to Satan, drop your hook in over here. Satan loves to fish in the troubled waters of a discontented heart. I got a real problem here. I've come to a landmark at the end of the book. I want you shouting. I want you to go, man, you just lifted my spirits. You sent me out here with something right now, and I'm leaving you with a funeral. We've ended this ninth book on a very low point. But when we turn this page, we're expecting a big change in the trajectory. We're expecting something brand new, but unfortunately, the war will continue on many levels. Samuel 2, we're going to see David. He's crowned the new king. He's just verified in front of all the people and validated. God did that when he anointed him with Samuel. But the war will continue. We will continue to see highs, great highs. In fact, the first few chapters, you can see some, I mean, it's great, man. The dude's taking over. And you're going to see great lows, all based on the importance of choices and the consequences of choices. So get ready. Get ready. I'm leaving you today in a funeral. I'm sending you home hoping you'll want to come back after all of this. I don't know. I'm just going to hold my breath. But I'm believing since we turned the page, there'll be a new adventure. Jim McKay was the great voice of wide world of sports in the Olympics for all those years. I was telling somebody I remember as a kid in 1972 where I watched him become a newsman when the Israelis were captured there at the Olympics there. And when he came on and he said, they are all gone. That voice. But I also remember every Saturday for most of my life, I heard the words, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. So what we're going to experience the next time we gather in this book, which will be in the month of September, we're going to see the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. in Israel's life there and in our life right now, the last year and a half, we've been going through trauma-based mind control. We're in a war. This is why I need to hear the word over and over again. Be careful what you hear. Make sure the word is outweighing those things that you hear right now. Because the bottom line is the story of Saul. Do not miss your day of visitation. Don't miss it right now. But ask God, is this the word? Is this the word? Is this an Egyptian with a good word, or is this a Malachite with a lie? They look the same. It comes the same way. But Lord, let me know. Let my discernment. And the discernment is on fire if our heart is a heart toward God and we are listening right now. We're not going to stop. We're not going to stop. Next week, we're going to come together for 3 weeks, and I'm going to try to raise your spirits from this funeral service. And I'm going to talk to you about loving God and hating sin. It is victorious. It's a blast. I speak. Walk out strong. Don't walk out in fear. Get out from under the bed. Smile and say, in Jesus' name, I'm going to be smart. I'm going to do the right things. I'm not going to be ignorant. I'm going to do what's right. Now I'm going to serve God, and I'm going to be a testimony for him, and I'm going to be a testimony to someone who is fearful, and I will speak life into them in Jesus' name, because this house is a house of no condemnation. Walk in and receive what God is saying. Let's all stand.